All right. Well, this morning in our Bible survey, we're going to consider the book of Proverbs. And very quickly, the title of Proverbs is Proverbs, and it's pretty much Proverbs in all of the different languages we've talked about. I think in the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Old Testament, it's called the Proverbs of Solomon. In the Hebrew Bible, it's called the Proverbs of, because that's the first word in the book. And obviously, then the Proverbs of Solomon. But as you may have guessed, by calling them the Proverbs of Solomon, the dates for Proverbs are really right in the life and reign of Solomon. The Proverbs that Solomon wrote, Solomon, by the way, didn't probably write all of the Proverbs. Actually, we know he didn't write all of the Proverbs. But let's try and... It's a little straighter. But Solomon reigned from about 970 BC to about 931. There's also a point, if you look, I think beginning in Proverbs 25, verse 1, a group of Proverbs that Hezekiah had, a group of Solomon's Proverbs that Hezekiah had compiled, and there are various and sundry other Proverbs from different wise men that were written and compiled in with Solomon's Proverbs. By the way, a proverb is a short, pithy statement that contains wisdom that's to be understood in some way, shape, or form. Now, as we talk about the purpose and the theme, the purpose of Proverbs is the young naive son is exhorted and instructed in the ways of wisdom. We'll see a good bit of this as we look at the outline of Proverbs and how the book is put together. But what we have really is Solomon exhorting and instructing his son in the ways of wisdom. In the ways of wisdom. And then obviously the key theme becomes wisdom. And if you'll remember back to a couple of weeks ago, when we kind of overviewed the writings, do you guys remember what wisdom is? We're still in the first five minutes, Kyle, so I can ask questions and expect answers, right? All right. Do you guys remember what wisdom is?
The knowledge of what to do and the ability to do it.
Excellent. It's the knowledge, it's the understanding of what to do in a given circumstance in order to achieve a desired outcome, and then the ability and the fortitude to follow through and achieve that, to accomplish those ends. It is the ability to discern the right course and the fortitude to navigate it. And what wisdom results in is really living life skillfully. It's living life skillfully. It's the ability to do the right thing and the fortitude to carry it out. The key verse is probably Proverbs 1:7. If the major theme of Proverbs, if the central focus of Proverbs is wisdom, Proverbs 1:7, along with several other verses in Proverbs, but this one in particular, tell us what is the beginning point of wisdom? Where is square one to living life skillfully? And that proverb says that the fear of the Lord, the fear of Yahweh, is the beginning of wisdom. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. So we see square one is a proper view of who God is. Square one of wisdom, square one of living a skillful life, is understanding who God is. And that makes a lot of sense, right? When we consider the two sides of wisdom there. First of all, the ability to discern the right course. The ability to discern the right course of action. And if you are going to understand the right thing to do, you have to understand something about the person who orders all things, right? The one who explains how things are and how things ought to be. And when we fear the Lord, if someone fears the Lord, that's exactly what's going to happen. And they understand something of the character of God. He understands something of what God is like and what God expects. His theology is straight, and so he can apply that theology then to the world around him. And the flip side of that, the second part of wisdom also is helped, given a foundation in the fear of the Lord. That's then the fortitude to do it. Because not only to be wise do you have to understand the right thing to do, but you also have to have the fortitude, the wherewithal, and the guts to follow through and do what's right. And the fear of the Lord obviously becomes a major motivator for that. If I understand who God is, if I understand what God requires, and I understand that that I ought to fear God, well then, I'm going to do what God wants. I'm going to do what God has said is best. So, let's take a little bit to go through an outline of the book of Proverbs. Sometimes I think we look at Proverbs and we see a whole bunch of short statements, a whole bunch of like one verse, one line, you know, one punchline kind of things, and we think, well, there's not a whole lot of organization to the book of Proverbs. And if you think that, then you're thinking incorrectly about the book. Did you know that there aren't actually Proverbs in Proverbs until Proverbs 10? Up until then, we have instruction in seeking out wisdom, in applying and understanding Proverbs. So let's take a look, and kind of like we did with Job 2 weeks ago, I want to kind of maybe hit some of the highlights along the way. And what we have first is the introduction to the book. Proverbs 1:1-7 really explains what Proverbs is all about. Let's just read that introduction. It'll help us to understand what's going on. Excuse me. Proverbs 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and the man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. To understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So that tells us what the book of Proverbs is all about. We see a couple of key ideas here, a couple of key things. And first, we see the purpose. Solomon lays out why he has written and gathered these Proverbs. He says, to instruct the naive, right? To instruct the naive in the way of wisdom. To instruct the one who doesn't know any better in the ways that he ought to know, in the ways that he ought to understand. And you'll see, who's the book addressed to here? Who's he talking to? He's talking to his son. At the beginning of verse 8, hear, my son, your father's instruction. In the ancient Near East, it was customary for a father to pass on his trade to his son, right? We see the example of even Jesus. Joseph was a carpenter, and so Jesus apparently was trained as a carpenter. We see it with Paul. Even though Paul was trained academically by Gamaliel and all of that, what do we see as his trade? He's a tent maker, probably because his dad was a tent maker, and his dad's dad was probably a tent maker, and you kind of passed along the family trade as you went. And we see that sometimes even today. The son inherits the father's business, he goes into the family business and all that kind of thing. But that was very customary. So imagine being a prince. What's Solomon's trade? Well, being wise and being a king, right? So Solomon is explaining to his son, apparently Rehoboam, how to be the king. Now, we see that he didn't take to the teaching very well, right? It's Rehoboam? Rehoboam, yeah. Yeah. The J's don't go together. That's how I have to remember it. The J's don't go together. Jeroboam was not the king of Judah. All right. Rehoboam was a fool, we see in 1 Kings. But that's not for lack of his father's instruction. His father gave him good instruction, wise instruction, and we have it recorded in Proverbs. So if you ever want to understand how to be a king or how to rule well, or how to lead well, the book of Proverbs is for you. Now, I don't think we have anyone of royal blood in here. But many of the traits of a king are the traits that the people are supposed to follow and they're supposed to look like. So what we see is really, really good wisdom passed down from a very, very wise man. Passed down from a very, very wise man to his son. What we have then, moving forward through the first part of the book of Proverbs, is the admonition to acquire wisdom. Before Solomon even really gets to that whole, here are the Proverbs that you've got to understand and figure out and come to learn, Solomon feels like he needs to convince his son to pursue wisdom. And that's what we see in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8, all the way through the end of chapter 9. Let's take a look at a couple of these things. We see in verse 8 that it's a call to his son. Hear, my son, your father's instructions, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. If there's a theme of this part of the book of Proverbs, this is it. Just like a good research paper or a good essay, Solomon starts off with his thesis statement. He says, son, listen to my teaching. Listen to my teaching. Pay attention to what I tell you. Listen to the teaching of your mother. Pursue wisdom and seek it out. There are then a couple of things set up, a couple of competitions set up throughout. Solomon warns his son that he needs to listen to his parents and their wisdom instead of following the crowd. So one of the competitions that's set up is the wisdom of his parents versus the folly of the crowd. And we see that played out at least one point here, and at least one point here in chapter 1. Read verses 8 through 10 with me. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. And he goes on and he talks about how the sinners are going to entice him. They're saying, come on, come with us, let's set an ambush for somebody and let's beat them up and let's take their money. Let's be dishonest in the way we go about gathering wealth. And we see that consistently from the crowd. They're going to tempt him to do what's wrong. And he says, don't listen to the crowd. Listen to me. And listen to your mother. Listen to wisdom. That's the second contest that's set up throughout this section of the book of Proverbs, is Lady Wisdom versus the harlot of folly. So he sets up this competition where wisdom is personified as a woman, as a lady, and she cries out to him. She says, follow me, listen to wisdom, seek out wisdom. And we see throughout that wisdom is not something that's hidden. It's something that stands in the streets. It's something, she's someone who calls out to whoever's naive, whoever doesn't know what's good. And she stands over and against the call of the harlot, the call of the prostitute and folly, and the folly that goes with her. Come to the very end. We kind of bookend with these two concepts. You have the father, the wisdom of the father and the mother against the folly of the crowd to start. And this section is brought to a climax. It's brought to a conclusion with Lady Wisdom versus the harlot folly. Come over to chapter 9. And sort of the whole book and the whole section has built to this one point. And what we have at chapter 9, in Proverbs chapter 9, is one last call from Lady Wisdom and from Folly, the harlot, to follow after them. Look at Proverbs 9:1. Wisdom has built her house. She's hewn out her seven pillars. She's prepared her food. She's mixed her wine. She's also set her table. She has sent out her maidens. She calls from the tops of the heights of the city. Whoever is naive, let him turn in here. Whoever lacks understanding, she says, come and eat of my food and drink of the wine I have mixed. Forsake your folly and live, and proceed in the way of understanding. So you have here the final call of Lady Wisdom to pursue her, to come and eat at the feast that she has prepared. But at the same time, you have the woman of folly in verse 13. And the woman of folly, it says, is boisterous. She is naive and knows nothing. She sits at the doorway of her house on a seat by the high places of the city, calling to those who pass by, who are making their paths straight. She says, and notice how it's exactly the opposite of what Lady Wisdom says, whoever is naive, let him turn in here. And to him who lacks understanding, she says, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he does not know that the dead are there, and their guests are in the depth of Sheol. So you have here the two paths laid out, and standing at the doorway, as it were, to wisdom. And Solomon says, you have two choices, son. You can follow wisdom. You can seek wisdom out. It's also important, it's interesting to note here, that Solomon doesn't consider wisdom as something that is hidden or hard to find or only for the intellectual elite. Right? Wisdom is there for the taking. Wisdom in I think it's Proverbs chapter 3, it says that wisdom stands at the corners of the street saying, come, find me, I'm right here. She here sends out people to, she sends out her messengers to every part of the city. She cries out from the highest points in the city, from the most prominent places in the city, whoever is naive, turn in here. He says wisdom calls out to whoever will listen and whoever will come. But he is also very straightforward about the fact that there will be temptation to abandon wisdom and to pursue folly. And he insists, he encourages, he exhorts, he begs, he pleads his son over and over and over and over and over again to pursue the wisdom that is so readily available to whoever will listen. So the assumption, I think, is that if we reach chapter 9, that we are going to pursue wisdom. That's the pursuit that we've decided to make. And then we get into the actual Proverbs in the book of Proverbs. And we can call it the Proverbs of Solomon and the Wise. And this is broken up really into three chunks. We have, first of all, the Proverbs of Solomon in chapter 10, verse 1. Through chapter 22, verse 16. And we see that here in 10:1. The Proverbs of Solomon. A wise son makes his heart, makes his father glad, but a foolish son is a grief to his mother. So this is made up, this is the part of Proverbs that's generally made up of short axioms, right? Short little, usually it's one line, or usually it's one verse. A couple of times a couple of verses are chunked together. But this part of the book really is kind of where you get the perception that, man, I'm not sure how all of this stuff is related, one verse to the next verse. It's a whole bunch of wisdom just thrown at you. And sometimes it's even confusing. But that's part of the point of a proverb. Part of the point of the proverb is for you to sit and not necessarily be confused, but for the wisdom not necessarily to be immediately available. The whole point is that you have to sit and think, right? Proverbs are wisdom, and you have to say, okay, how does this work? What's the relationship sometimes between these things? And by the way, what we see primarily in these is that parallelism that we talked about. Usually we have Proverbs working together in one of a couple ways. Remember, sometimes parallelism works where it says the first line says something and the second line says exactly the opposite. Sometimes the parallelism, the first line says something and the second line says something in just a little different way. Or the same thing in the opposite way or something like that. That's what we have here. Two opposites. A wise son makes his father glad, but the foolish son is the grief of his mother. And we see contrasts. And the key very often to understanding Proverbs is to understand how the two lines relate to each other. How do they say the same thing? How do they say the opposite thing? Where's the wisdom in what I'm trying to grasp here? So as you sit, I'm going to assume that you're going to take some time and read through Proverbs. As you sit and ponder the Proverbs, your first thought ought to be, how do the two lines, how are they related to one another? How do the truths in the two lines, how do they work? How do they work together? In chapter 22, verse 17, we have a transition in the book, and we call this the Proverbs of the Wise. The Proverbs of the Wise. And what happens here is there's a change in style from the one verse or maybe two verse Proverbs back to a little bit of discourse, kind of like we had in the first nine chapters. Kind of like we had in the first nine chapters. Let me give you an example of this. Look at Proverbs 24, verse 30, and we'll read through 34. I pass by the field of the sluggard, and the vineyard of the man lacking in sense. Behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles, and its stone wall was broken down. When I saw, I reflected upon it. I looked and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then your poverty will come as a robber, and your want like an armed man. So you see here, there's a discourse. There's a little bit of a story going on here, right? A little bit of development in thought. Instead of just throwing out the one-line proverb at this point, generally from chapter, 22, verse 17 through chapter 24, verse 34, through this section right here, you have a little bit of discourse. And Solomon here, or whoever this wise man is that wrote this, is talking about he went by a vineyard that it was all run down and broken down, and he said, it caused me to think. I stopped and I thought about, well, this guy, whoever's keeping this vineyard, he's a sluggard. He's lazy. And he's saying here, the guy must have thought, I'll just sit and I'll relax for a little bit. Won't do too much today, and I'll just fold my hands and rest. I'm really kind of tired today. And he talks about the ruin of that man. He's not making any money from his vineyard, because apparently he's not growing any grapes there. So you have this change, though, back to a short discourse. Again, then, when we come to chapter 25, we have, this is where Hezekiah had sent men out or assigned men to gather up some of the Proverbs of Solomon and then copy them down. And what you have here are groups of Proverbs that are organized by theme. Okay, look at 25:1, and we see the background to how this has happened. These also are Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, the king of Judah, transcribed. So Hezekiah sent people out, and they're gathering these Proverbs together, and as they gather them, they apparently organize them thematically. All right, they organize them thematically, and we can take a look at one of those themes. Look at chapter 26, and we're going to read verses 3 through 12. These are Proverbs concerning fools. A whip is for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, and a rod for the back of fools. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will be like him. Answer a fool as his folly deserves, that he not be wise in his own eyes. He cuts off his own feet and drinks violence, who sends a message by the hand of a fool. Let the legs which are useless to the lame, like legs which are useless to the lame, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools. Like one who binds a stone in a sling, so is he who gives honor to a fool. He's playing with a loaded gun. Like a thorn which falls into the hand of a drunkard, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools. Like an archer who wounds everyone, so is he who hires a fool or who hires those who pass by. Like, some of these are funny. Like an archer, you just kind of shooting arrows at everybody and doing harm to everybody who passes by. Like a dog that returns to his vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. Do you see a man who is wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him. So you see, obviously, there the theme of that section of Proverbs is, what's a fool like, and how are you supposed to deal with him? So, kind of fun, you know, if you are looking for wisdom in a particular area or based on a particular thing, this section of Proverbs is kind of nice. You can just kind of look down through your headings and in your Bible and find the wisdom you're looking for. So then when we come, that type of organization rounds out this section, moves through 29. Oh, I meant to give you those. And Solomon. And then in Proverbs 30 and 31, we have a few different authors, a few new authors for Proverbs, and we have some final words from these individuals. Chapter 30 is from a man named Agur, the words of Agur, the son of Jecha, the oracle. The man declares to Ithiel and Ucal. So these are mostly like the short one-liners, or maybe the extended discourse, the short discourse. And then in Proverbs 31, we have the king's, or the words of Lemuel. And we're obviously familiar with Proverbs 31 as we have the description from Lemuel of what an excellent woman is like. So that's a sort of an outline. We maybe hit some of the highlights. I want to take the rest of our time this morning, or most of the rest of our time this morning, to talk about some of the major themes that run through Proverbs. So some of the things that you should keep your eyes open for as we move through. And the first is the God of Proverbs. The God of Proverbs. Now, we already talked about what's the key concept. Where do you start for wisdom? I know it's been a little while since I asked a question. What's that? The fear of the Lord, right? The fear of Yahweh. So Solomon, though, doesn't just say you need to fear God and then leave it at that. He also takes some time to explain in his Proverbs what God is like, who God is, and why we ought to fear him, what we need to understand about him. And we see a number of different things about God in the book of Proverbs. This is interesting to me, too, because I think we tend to think of Proverbs as wisdom for how to go about life and how to live in the world. But the first thing that we have to understand about living in the world is who God is. This is why I laugh, and I don't laugh so much as I just kind of shake my head and go, ah, when people say, don't give me so much theology, I want something that is practical. Teach me practical things. And the foundation of practicality is theology. It's to understand who God is and how God works and how God expects things to work, how God has designed things to work. So, my answer to them is usually, I am being practical when I explain theology, when we go through theology. A couple of things, we'll have to move pretty quickly. We're coming close here. Couple of things about God. First of all, God is sovereign. God is sovereign. Look at Proverbs 16, and there are several Proverbs here in chapter 16 that speak to this. 16:1, the plans of the heart belong to a man, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. Verse 4, the Lord has made everything for his own purpose, even the wicked for the day of evil. Verse 9, the mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. Verse 33, the lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord. So we have references to the sovereignty of God throughout the book of Proverbs. We also see that God is man's maker. Stick a finger here in chapter 16, because we'll be right back here in just a second. But Proverbs chapter 20, verse 12, you can just listen. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made both of them. God is the one who makes man. Some of the implications of that include the fact that if God is maker, God is sovereign. God understands how we work. God understands how things ought to work. God understands what we ought to do. God understands what we shouldn't do. He's made us. He knows how we work. He understands us. And so we ought to function as he has directed us to function. We also see that God is man's blesser. Back in chapter 16, verse 7, when a man's ways are pleasing to the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. Makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. We also see that man is God's judge, or God is man's judge. Man is not God's judge. That was misspoken. God is man's judge. Look at verse 5. Everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Assuredly, he will not be unpunished. Do you see how a basic theology here that Solomon lays out really sets the foundation for wisdom? God made us. He is in control over all things. God understands how we function. God is judge. God is the one who brings blessing. Do things the way that God has laid it out, and things will be so much better. Things will be so good. And when you sit and think about it, it's kind of, well, duh, right? God understands how things ought to work. God has designed us to function a certain way, and then he's told us how we should function. He's told us how he's made us to function. He's told us how he's designed us, and then it's pretty dumb if we're going to say, yeah, God told me to function that way. He's made me to function that way. He's in control of all things. He's the one who brings blessing. He's the one who will judge, but I'm gonna ignore the instructions that he's given for life. So it's very important to Solomon that we understand something of who God is, and you see how the fear of God really becomes the foundation for living a life skillfully. Living life skillfully. So the God of Proverbs is key. By the way, a little statistic here, about 10% of the Proverbs mention God or Yahweh. We also have a theme of man before God. So here's the flip side. Man's relationship with God. Solomon explains a good deal about that. In Proverbs 19:3, we see one thing about man's relationship with God. The foolishness of man ruins his way, and his heart rages against the Lord. The foolish man is against God. Man is rebellious against God. We also see in chapter 16, verse 6, that man needs to trust God. By loving kindness and truth, iniquity is atoned for, and by the fear of the Lord, one keeps away from evil. We need to fear the Lord to keep away from evil and trust him. We also see that all men are the same, are equal before God, according to Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 2 says, "The rich and the poor have a common bond. The Lord is the maker of them all." So Solomon's very clear to his son that just because he is rich doesn't mean that God will show him favoritism. Solomon's also very clear that just because an individual is poor, God does not show him favoritism. That each man will answer to the Lord on an equal footing. So man before God and man's relationship to God is also key in the book of Proverbs. Obviously, then, the personal conduct of man is important. Come to Proverbs chapter 10. We're going to just pick out a few. Obviously, a great deal of the book of Proverbs has to do with how we conduct ourselves. How we conduct ourselves. We're to be diligent. Proverbs 10:4. Poor is he who works with a negligent hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. The way we speak is key in the book of Proverbs. Look at chapter 10, verse 21. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for the lack of understanding. The way that the righteous use their tongues brings great gain. Humility. We are to conduct ourselves in humility. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 2. And there are many verses on all of these things. I've just picked out a couple that sort of lead us through, the book. Proverbs 11, 2. When pride comes, then comes dishonor. But with the humble is wisdom. You can also take a look at Proverbs chapter 12, verse 9. Better is he who is lightly esteemed and has a servant than he who honors himself and lacks bread. The importance of controlling your temper is key in Proverbs. Look at Proverbs chapter 12, verse 16. A fool's anger is known at once, but a prudent man conceals dishonor. Proverbs 14, 29. He who is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who is quick-tempered exalts folly. Now, we also see the importance of joy in life and how much better joy makes life. Look at 14:10. The heart knows its own bitterness, and the stranger does not share its joy. But flip over then to 15, verse 13. A joyful heart makes a cheerful face, but when the heart is sad, the spirit is broken. Skip down to verse 15. All the days of the afflicted are bad, but a cheerful heart has a continual feast. So how we conduct ourselves, what is wise conduct, is addressed in the book of Proverbs. Also, how do we conduct ourselves, particularly in society? How do we conduct ourselves with other people? Family life is a very important aspect of this. How do you conduct yourself with a wife? Obviously, also with a husband, but this is addressed to Solomon's son, so it's looking at it from the viewpoint of a man. Look at Proverbs chapter 12, verse 4. We see here that the choice of a wife is vital. You single guys in here, if you get a good wife, life will be very good. If you get a bad wife, life will be very, very difficult. Look at Proverbs chapter 12, verse 4. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who shames him is like rottenness in his bones. And we see this played out throughout the book of Proverbs. We see, first of all, that a good wife is a huge blessing. Look at chapter 18, verse 22. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. Chapter 19, verse 14. House and wealth are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. We see how much of a blessing a prudent wife is. But we also see that a bad wife is a huge bane. Look at chapter 21, verse 9. It is better to live in a corner of a roof than a house shared with a contentious woman. Not that I would know, but yeah, that's the case. I've seen, not my wife, but I've seen contentious wives. And it would be better just for the guy to make a little bed and place to live in his attic than to have to live around her. Look at verse 19. It is better to live in a desert land than with a contentious and vexing woman. Proverbs also says that a nagging wife is like a constant drip. And I have a friend who, when his wife would say something and he'd joke around and say, drip, 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 and she'd say, go live in the attic then. So they enjoyed that. The raising of children, also key for wise family life. And really, it says two things about raising children, and several people in this room are in the whole raising children stage of things. So here are the two keys to that. First of all, give them instruction. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and even when he is old, he will not depart from it. And what is bound up in training a child? Well, it is discipline. And discipline and more discipline. Look at chapter 22, verse 15. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him. Look at verse 20 or chapter 23, verses 13 and 14. This is probably a couple of verses that the world would be well off to understand today. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with a rod, he will not die. People who tell you that you do terrible things to your children by spanking them are wrong. You shall strike him with the rod and rescue his soul from Sheol. This is certainly not in favor of abuse or anything like that, but it is in favor of a good spanking. To wrap up here, also in society, Solomon talks a good bit about being among kings and the proper way to conduct yourself among those men. obviously key for Solomon's sons in particular. Talking about how to deal with neighbors and talking about how to deal with wealth. Be generous and kind with your wealth. So that's man in society. Now, very quickly, by way of review, I think that's the end of this. By way of review, the purpose of the book of Proverbs is to instruct the naive. The naive person is someone who doesn't know any better, who doesn't understand how he ought to go about life. And to be honest, in some ways, in one way or another, all of us are naive. All of us are needing in wisdom. And wisdom is how to live life skillfully. A couple of applications, implications. First of all, fear God. If you want to live life skillfully, understand God's character, understand how God relates to man and how man relates to God, understand what God requires of us, and then do it. Understand who God is. And that will lay the foundation for living life skillfully. To live life skillfully, learn and understand theology so that you can apply its principles to life situations, and then have the fortitude to follow through on the application of the principles that you see. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for the book of Proverbs and the wisdom that it contains, Father, because we are so in need of it. Lord, we are faced through life with many trials, many different decisions, many different circumstances that we need to face that require wisdom. Lord, help us to, first of all, know and love and understand you and what you have required of us. Father, then give us the fortitude, the determination and resolve to follow through on what we know to be right. Lord, may we do so first and foremost so that we are pleasing to you, honoring to you, and Father, so that we would live our lives skillfully to our benefit and to the benefit of those around us. I pray these things in your Son's name. Amen.